is Ishak Chayil. Ishak Chayil is very well known as the song that is sung Friday night, Leil Shabbat, that is sung at the family tables at the Seudah Shabbat, and something that really, as we know it, praises the woman and extols the different virtues and qualities of the woman. Just to give you a little bit of background, King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, when he wrote the book of Mishlei of Proverbs, this is the very last parak, the last chapter of Proverbs, and it comes right after his marriage to the princess of Egypt, the daughter of the king of Egypt. You know, King Solomon married many, many wives. He had all kinds of reasons for it. He thought he was doing the right thing. He thought he was bringing everybody closer to God. Actually, as we know from the scriptures, we know that King Shlomo HaMelech should not have married all of those princesses and all of those wives, but he did. And on the night of his marriage to one of these princesses, the princess of Egypt, he was very busy with his wife, with his new bride that night, of course, and he slept late in the morning. Now, you would excuse a groom, a newly married man, for sleeping late the morning after his wedding. However, it was the wrong morning for someone else to pick, because that was the morning of the dedication of the temple, of the Beit HaMikdash. Of the Beit HaMikdash itself, that King Solomon had worked, that his father, King David, had started, had acquired the land, had worked to get the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, started, and Shlomo HaMelech spent many long years building the temple, and this great day had finally come, the morning in which they would be entering the temple for the very first time, and there he is, Shlomo HaMelech is sleeping late, King Solomon is sleeping late. The only problem with that was that the keys to the temple were under his head, under his pillow, because he, as the king of Israel, had to be the one to go in, open the doors, and let in the Kohanim, the priests, who are going to offer the first sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash that very day. And so, King Solomon is sleeping, and no one other than his mother would dare disturb the king when he's sleeping. And so his mother, Bathsheba, went right into his kingly chambers and woke up her sleeping son, and then proceeded to rebuke him, and to rebuke him rather strongly. And in the chapter preceding Ishak Chayil, King Solomon actually writes 10 sukkim of her rebuke. He tells us exactly what she said to him, and exactly how she said that he had disappointed her expectations, that her expectation was to have a son not who needed to be the king. I did not have royal aspirations for my son, she said. I have aspirations for a son who would be close to God and who would want to do nothing other than serve God in whatever way he could. And is this what happens, my son? This is what happens on the day of the dedication of the holy temple. You're sleeping because you married this princess the night before. This is very ill-fated timing. And she proceeded to give it to him quite nicely. Interestingly enough, Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, writes the words of her rebuke. How many of us would like to publicly, for all of Israel to see, for all future generations, as one of the books of the scriptures, how many of us would like to have the rebuke of, whether it's a parent, whether it's a husband, whoever it is, that's having some sharp words to say to us, recorded for all time. But King Solomon records that his mother's words were very precious to him, and he indeed accepted her rebuke and understood that she was right. And immediately following that, he wrote Ishak Chayil. And he wrote this poem as a tribute to his mother, to Bathsheba. So again, we see the greatness of King Solomon, because how many people, immediately after getting this blistering rebuke from a mother, would be willing to write this long, beautiful poem in tribute to her, extolling her virtues? But this is what King Solomon did. And this is how Ishak Chayil opens, the 31st chapter in Proverbs. And as with the rest of Proverbs, this, too, is a proverb, if you will, a parable. And King Solomon writes an entire chapter, and he goes with the verses in alphabetical order from the beginning of the Hebrew alphabet, the Aleph to Tav, and he goes through 22 verses in which he describes and praises the Jewish woman, specifically his mother, but has been interpreted as the Jewish woman of all time. And in that parak, in that chapter, he's using the woman as a parable for many special things. So while he's writing about the woman, and we can understand it on one level, meaning the woman and everything she's about, on a deeper level, we can also understand it, and interestingly enough, the commentaries really go into this, and they talk about how the Jewish woman is being used as a metaphor for the soul, a metaphor for the Torah, and a metaphor for Shabbos. If you think about this, these three things, the soul, the Torah, and Shabbos, are the three holiest things in Jewish life. And it is the woman who is chosen to be the metaphor for all three.
King Solomon feels that she indeed is the fitting way to describe all three of these very, very sacred, lofty things that we as Jewish people hold in very great esteem. So we're going to look at Yisrael. We by no means will be able to get through all of it, so I am going to just choose some of the verses that I believe have a deep meaning for us as women. And I always feel terrible when I do Yisrael in one session that we can't cover all of it, but we'll do what we can tonight. Okay, we'll start with the first verse, where actually Yisrael means Shavra Chok Misimim Mikra. Who can find a woman of Chayil? Chayil means strength. Chayil means accomplishment. Who can find a woman of strength and accomplishment? She is Rachok Mitzinim. Her value is far greater than pearls. And so King Solomon starts out by telling us that this woman that I'm about to describe with all these special qualities is indeed somebody very precious, very valuable, and not necessarily easy to find. This isn't something where at 21 years old, or 23 or 24, whatever age a girl is getting married, she is already the consummate Eish of Chayil. Not yet, not yet. It's really a lifelong journey, and that's what King Solomon says to us. What is this comparison to pearls? We know that pearls are found through deep sea diving into the bottom, the depths of the ocean. And Zarichol is the Imke Tahom HaNefesh, just as you need to do deep sea diving to bring out a pearl. And one pearl has to be found, and you have to go into it and go to the oyster and get out the pearl, and it is quite a process to be able to find enough pearls to string together a strand of pearls. And King Solomon is saying that likewise, in order to be this person, Tzarich Laredes L'Imkei Tehom HaNefesh, we need to go into the depths of our soul and to bring out and to bring up those qualities that we really do have. But it takes a lot to get there, and it takes a lot of soul searching and a lot of work to be able to go into the soul and bring out those qualities, which are sometimes just there in potential, sometimes they're dormant. Sometimes we kind of don't feel like using those qualities, so we squash them right back down, and then we have to go right back in and bring it out and be able to bring these qualities together. So he is telling us this woman and her qualities are truly valuable and truly special. But don't think this is an easy job. This isn't a quick fix. And we all know that in today's day and age we like the quick fix, you know, and I'm thinking back to the time when ancient times, and we got an exercise bike in the house. My daughter was about 3, and she said to me, "What's this for, Mommy?" And I said, "Oh, because I'm going to really use this. I lose a lot of weight, right?" And she said, "Oh, well, I want to do that too." So she got onto the bike, but she couldn't get onto the seat. So she sat on the bar, and she's pedaling away, you know, and that lasted for about 35 seconds, and she's trying with all her might to pedal this bike. And then she hops off the bike and goes onto the bathroom scale and says, "So, Mommy, did I lose weight?" I'm like, didn't happen yet, but you never know, you know. But anyway, we like that with weight loss, don't we? And listen, if I'm going to start this diet and I'm going to really be good about it for 2 days, I should really be losing weight. And when I'm not, forget it. It's just not worth it, right? But so in today's day and age, when technology provides us with a quick fix in whatever way we want it, right? And if it doesn't happen right away, we get really nervous about it. It's kind of hard to go into what King Solomon is telling us, but we all know that, don't we? That working on our character traits, working on our midos, being a person who really, really wants to be and become and work hard to be, takes a lot of work. And so this is what he says to us. It's a journey. And let's try to find some of these special qualities of this woman as we journey on this Eish of Chayil together. The next verse that I'd like to talk about, Kamalasu told the Lo Rab Kol Yemei Chayeha. She repays, in this case it's referring to a woman as her husband, but this could be used in any relationship, she repays him with good and not bad Kol Yemei Chayeha, her whole life through. I see that some of you heard my lecture last night, we mentioned this verse, maybe you remember it, I hope you don't mind that we're bringing it in again, because I think it's such an important part of what it means to be a woman. And that it is truly special that we are saying over here that sometimes, even when somebody is treating her less than optimally, her husband comes home, he's had a hard day at work, he's not in a great mood, he sits down on the couch, buries his nose in the newspaper, and there he is going at the paper, and you're like, honey, me, remember, your wife, you know, I've been taking care of the kids today, you know, like maybe we could, you know. Maybe you could remember that I'm here, and she's kind of getting a little huffy about this herself, and he's just sitting there, and Storming's tendency might be, well, listen, hello, that's how he's going to treat me. I got to give back as good as I got from him. And here the verse is telling us, no, that's not how this woman is going to react. She is going to look at a situation, whatever the situation is, and she is going to do and become what she wants to be. She's not going to be a reactive kind of a person. She is going to look for what is right in this situation and what will bring out the best, in this case, in my relationship with my husband, in any other case, what is going to make me into the best person I can be. And I will be very, very remiss if I do not say that we're not talking here about a situation where the husband is mistreating the wife. No, we're not talking about that at all. We're just talking about the normal ins and outs of daily life, the normal ups and downs of daily life, where sometimes somebody can be less than sensitive to a spouse. And here, this woman, instead of getting all bent out of shape, is deciding that she is going to do what she wants to do, which is to greet her husband nicely, to serve him nicely, to act in the way that she wants to be, and not to give back as good as she's gotten. And what I think of is an experience that I once had in a florist, where I wanted to, it was a Friday afternoon, and I went into the florist, I just wanted to buy a few roses with some baby's breath to welcome a friend's mother to town. I hadn't had time to bake anything, I decided this will do the job. And so I went into the florist, the only customer in the store, I figured, okay, this is easy, I'll be in and out right away. No, not really, because I had forgotten that it was the Friday before Mother's Day. And I come in and I ask the woman in the florist, I said, so can I have three roses, babies, but green? And she says to me, what? Don't you know it's Mother's Day? Don't you know that I have all these big orders to fill? And you're coming in and asking me for three roses? And she starts yelling at me, and I'm like, whoa, I don't have to take this from you. This is what I'm thinking. I don't have to take this from you. I'm just going to march right out of here. And you will never see me as a customer again. That's what I'm thinking. And then I said to myself, one minute. Look what you're doing, because somebody treated you in a way that is less than appropriate. You're going to go back and give her as good as she got, and you're going to also just march right out of there in anger and frustration. That's not the kind of person you want to be. And so I decided I was going to see what I could do there. And I said to her, So do you think you'll be able to fill my order? Because if you will, I'll wait. You know, I'll wait. If not, then that's okay. You know, if you can't do it, I understand. It's Arab Mother's Day, after all, you know. So she, like, got all nervous, that, you know. I said, don't worry. 5 minutes, and I'll be with you. So I figured, and I kind of felt like that entire 5 minutes that I was waiting for her, that I was working on myself, working on my needles, and I said, great, this is great spiritual exercise. You are learning how to be a person that doesn't get things done for you right away, and then get insulted by somebody, and that's okay. You're not going to respond to her in the way that she did to you. And so here, when we hear about this trait, kol yemei chayeha, this goes her whole life through, and the Malbim, who is a 19th century commentary, comments on this by saying, look at how incredible this is. Because you do see women who treat everybody sweetly and nicely when everything's going great. But when the chips are down, somehow she's not ready to or able to just come across in the way that she should be doing. But here's a woman who calls me chayacha. He says, bimeha oni v'amachzar, at times of financial deprivation, financial hardship, she's also repaying her husband as nicely as she possibly can. And sure it's easy when your husband gives you the credit card for anything you want and says, by all means, please go out and buy yourself that new fur coat you've been wanting for such a long time. And of course you're going to respond sweetly and nicely. But what about when that credit card is not forthcoming and you're not getting the things you want? It's a lot harder. And what about times, he says, it's easy for a woman to be all excited and happy to greet her husband and so nice to him when she's young and just got married and she's still in that starry-eyed honeymoon stage, you know, we all remember that. But what about as life goes on and she gets older and it's harder because she's not feeling great and people as they age and as they get older, it's not so easy. And still, kol yemei chayeha. What we're hearing here about this woman is that there's consistency, there's constancy. There is something that she values as a very important quality for her, and she takes it as she goes through every situation in life. What an incredible way to be. Kol yemei chayeha. Through the ups and the downs, she brings this with her, and she takes it through life. And then we hear about her. She seeks wool and linen. She's looking for fabric. And she's looking for it. And she's doing it with the willingness of the palms of her hand. In other words, She's a mother, she's look, or a wife, and she's looking for fabric to make clothing for the members of her household. And Darshan Samarafishnam, it is interesting to note that Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, talks about these two fabrics, the wool and the linen. There are a lot of commentaries on why this is the combination of shatness, and but that's not what we're going to have time for tonight. But the wool and linen are both known as expensive, high-quality fabrics. When she is doing something, she's doing it, the Malbim explains, outside Hayoser Tov, in the best possible way that she can. And he follows this through in the next several verses, showing how when she does something, she does it well. This is not the woman who's going to cut corners, do a sloppy job, and just get it done to get it done. Because that's not how a person approaches something that's meaningful and important in life. When we're doing something for people we care about, we want to do it outside Hayoser Tov, in the best possible way. But of course, we would have to take into account what else is going on in life. You cannot say that the best possible way is, well, I am going to make this gala, 7-course set of brachos for my sister-in-law when I have 3 little kids, and all of a sudden my husband comes home with the flu, so he can't do anything for me, and I'm making a set of brachos for 80 people myself, and I'll do a 7-course dinner for all of them with these 3 little kids and a husband in bed with the flu. That isn't going to work. So then a woman has to understand, outside of Yom Tov does not mean that anyone expects perfection of us. And sometimes we do this to ourselves. We can make ourselves crazy with pushing ourselves beyond because everything's got to be way up there. So King Solomon is saying, under the given circumstances of her life, she seeks the best quality, she does what she can to make this the best possible situation. But she does it b'chefes katan, she does it willingly. And the Mitzvah says, Ki'ilu ha-kapayim atzman rotzos bimlacha, as if the palms of her hands are itching to work. Okay, that describes all of us, right? I can't wait to do another load of laundry. As soon as Tisha B'Av is over, I can't wait to fold all those mountains of laundry that'll be waiting for me, right? My palms, my hands are itching to work. What more can I do? I need more dishes to wash, more, right? Okay, but here, she looks at what is in front of her, she looks at a day's work, and she does it willingly. And I think we all know that a mother and a wife, or a friend, if for that matter, in any situation in life, a friend, a coworker, when we do something willingly, and people can sense this very easily, especially little people in our lives, they know when we're doing something willingly, don't they? And when you're doing it, and sometimes it's at the most inopportune times, and your kids somehow come up with it, and, you know, I brought an example earlier this week, I think on Shabbos, you know, your son comes to you 9 o'clock at night and all of a sudden tells you that he's in a performance the next day or his class is having a film the next day and he must have this and that to wear, and guess what? This and that to wear are down in a pile of dirty laundry and it's 9 o'clock at night and you're like, okay, nice of you to come to me now. And I'm not saying we may need to teach this little boy, this little 9-year-old boy, that this isn't the way to approach a situation. He may have to suffer certain consequences, whatever you need to do with that child, but there is a difference between the mother who's going to show that I want to do this for you, or and maybe I can't because I decided it's not good for you if you can come to me at 9 o'clock at night, but I want to do this for you, okay? So whatever the situation is, when children or when people in our lives, you know the people who come to us and say, oh, if there's anything I can do, let me know. You know that kind of thing, right? How often do we let them know if there's anything they can do? I don't know about you, I haven't often taken people up on that. But I'll tell you that I was making a bar mitzvah for one of my sons, and I had a friend, and she came over to me and she said to me, the day of your bar mitzvah, I have 3 hours blocked off for you. You just tell me what you want me to do, and I will be doing it. You want me to set up in the hall, you want me to do an airport run, whatever it is, but these 3 hours from 10 to 1 are yours. So please fill them for me, and tell me what you want me to do. What did I understand there? Very, very clearly that she was doing it b'chefes kapeha. She wanted to do something. And you better believe I took her up on it because I needed a lot of help, but I was the one who wasn't willing to go to the people who said, oh, if you need help, just let me know, just call me, I'll be willing to come help you, right? There's a difference, and people sense that difference when we do something b'chefes kapeha. As if our palms and our hands are itching to work. Okay, and we want to do whatever we can to help the next person, to help our family, right? And then we come to Haisaka Aniyam Socher Mimerchak Tavi Lachma. She is compared to a merchant ship that goes out afar to bring in merchandise. And I don't know how many women think of this as a great compliment, to be considered a merchant ship. I never thought of that personally myself as a great compliment. But what are we saying about this woman? That she goes out, again, this is part of the, she does things outside Hayot Gedolah in the best possible way. If she sees that the law of supply and demand would indicate that going out further afield to bring in something to supplement her family's income would do better than just going to see what she can do right here in the environment, she'll go out, she'll bring something from far away, she'll create a business. And here, this is so interesting to me. We're talking about King Solomon. We don't really associate women working with King Solomon's days, do we? Way back then, in the days of the Holy Temple. But apparently, King Solomon is praising a woman who sees a need in her family and responds to it. And this might be one of the ways that a woman might need to respond. This, of course, opens up a whole different area, because which we certainly don't have time to tackle tonight. But a woman working and juggling family and work and all those kinds of things, and I'm sure some of you know what that's about, right? So that's a really whole discussion unto itself. But there's another piece here that I'd like to focus on, and that is that the Midrash over here says that Haisak HaMiyom Sochem, Rimerichon Samilachma, is referring to our matriarch Sarah, Sarah Imenu. And it tells us that she was like a boat, Haisak Mitzul tells you Makom and Makom, she was taken from place to place, Kisvina Zu, like a ship that goes from one port city to the next. And what are we hearing? What is the phrase to our matriarch Sarah that she was being taken from one port city to the next? And this also is a metaphor. This is also a parable, describing the life of Sarah Imenu, which was far from easy. And let's understand that she was literally and figuratively taken from place to place along with her husband Avraham Avinu. And Avraham Avinu, as we know, went through the 10 trials and tests that he did, and he went, they literally left their home in Haran, came to Eretz Canaan, the land of Canaan. There was a famine, they had to go down to Egypt, they came back to Canaan, they went to the Philistines, to the Plishtim. They were traveling all over, literally and figuratively as well, on the level, on the deeper level of all of the challenges they faced in life. They did not have a life of smooth sailing at all. And Sarah Imenu, as she went through the stormy seas of what it meant to be the first Jewish man in the world and the first Jewish woman in the world, the first converts in the world, actually, because that's what they were, Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu, the first converts to Judaism. And as they went through their journey of life, replete with many challenges and much adversity, Sarah Imenu took this in stride and was the woman of great faith in God and great inner serenity, menuchas hanefesh. She had this quality of menuchas hanefesh in which whatever was going on in the storminess around her, she was able to weather it, and weather it with serenity and dignity. And that came from her unwavering, unshakable faith, bitachon in Hashem. But let's understand a little bit, let's talk a little bit about this mida, menuchas hanefesh, this inner serenity. This inner serenity of a woman, because a woman is the one upon whom her whole family depends so completely. She's like, I used this term before, she's like the hub and all the spokes are coming out of her. And if the woman is calm and composed and holding it together, guess what? The family will respond that way. But if the woman is all over the place and she's stressed beyond and overwhelmed and this and that, it isn't going to happen. The family's not going to make it really well. And Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitz, who was the Mashkiach and the great Mussar giant of pre-war Europe and the great Mary Yeshiva in Poland, described the idea or discusses this idea of Menuchas HaNefesh, and he says people make a big mistake. They think that Menuchas HaNefesh, this inner serenity, comes from Menuchas HaGuf, comes from comfortable surroundings, easy life, then you can be a calm, composed kind of person, he says. Actually, he says, if that's what you think, a person who thinks like that will end up being a person who is stressed and overwhelmed beyond in life, because if the only time we can maintain that inner serenity is when things are going our way, things are going well for us, things are smooth sailing, guess what? We all know that's not life. And if that's what it takes to help you stay composed and calm, it's not going to happen. And the comparison he brings is actually to somebody trying to quench their thirst with salt water, with salty water. Now, we all know that if somebody's very, very thirsty and takes a drink of salty water, the very first moment the liquid goes down, they'll think, okay, good, I just drank some water, I'm good to go. Actually, what will that salty water do? It will strengthen, it will increase the person's thirst. Thank you. What great timing. Not salty water. Will increase the person's thirst and make the person really need more liquid than they did before. And so he says, if you think that training yourself through calm, quiet circumstances are what's really going to do it for you, you're actually going to end up more stressed than you were before. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nivra B'Ro. Thank you so much. And then he gives another example, and I think this one's a great one. He says, imagine a soldier who is training in boot camp, and he is about to be shipped out to live combat. And unfortunately today, it doesn't take much to imagine that such situations are possible, right? And he says, so the soldier's in boot camp, and what happens to a soldier in boot camp? He has to do 300 push-ups before breakfast. He'd wake him up at the crack of dawn, 300 push-ups before breakfast, crawling on his belly through mud and through thorns and thickets and underbrush, and then they bring him into the dining room, the mess hall over there, and they slap down some chow on some, who knows what, undistinguishable mess of some kind of food on his plate, and that's where he eats, and then he's got to go out again, and he's got to do this and that, and they really, really put them through very rigorous training. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Rava says, 1 minute, why don't they just make it easier, Bram? Why don't they make it easy? Let him sit down in air-conditioned mess hall, big screen that shows him live combat, right? We'll show him soldiers on the screen, running, jumping, doing live combat, whatever they have to do there. Let him watch how it's done while he sips a six-pack of beer or Diet Coke, whatever he prefers. And then he'll go up to combat. It's going to be bad enough for him when he gets to combat. Do you have to make it hard for him now? And Rabbi Lubavitch explains, as we all know, that if you were to put a soldier into live combat after easy, comfortable situations in life, what would happen to him is that he would become so overwhelmed at the first gunshot that he would turn tail and run immediately. He would never be able to face that terror of what it is. But if he trained under very adverse conditions, he will understand what it means to be in live combat. And so Rabbi Lubavitch says, that is what we need to do. We need to train for the more challenging circumstances in life, the ones that would really overwhelm us, the ones that would really stress us out. And we all know that we go through situations in life, right? We need to train for that, those moments of, so to speak, live combat and adversity by training ourselves in the smaller, easier times. When the flat tire is, and I'm like, oh my God, not what I needed right now, not what I needed. Here I am hosting five families from Israel for I don't know what, and all of a sudden, flat tire, they call me from school, my daughter's gotten it, and I don't know what, I didn't need this right now. And if we can say, whoa, stay calm, stay composed, menuchas ha-nefesh, take a deep breath, do what it takes to stay calm, because this is part of your training ground for life. And if you lose it now, especially when those other little people around you, right? And I think of a woman in Chicago, a family in Chicago, that was planning on making their daughter's wedding in actually the dining room of Skokie Yeshiva. They could not afford a wedding in a hotel, and they decided that rather than go into debt for quite a bit of money, or rather than asking people to help them, which, you know, sometimes very generous people would come forward, they didn't want any of that. And they decided they were going to keep it simple. They were going to make this wedding a dining hall. Skokie Yeshiva would be a simple, no-frills affair, and the chasan and kala would be happy, and okay. Well, about 2 weeks before the wedding, lightning struck Skokie Yeshiva. And I don't know if you remember this. This goes back about 15 years. Your son was there. See, she can corroborate. I'm telling you a true story here. About 15, 16 years ago, right? Something like that. And lightning struck the yeshiva, and the fire department came down and quarantined the whole dining area, and they were not allowed to use it for a month. They said it couldn't be touched at all. It was a dangerous area. Closed it up. And here's this woman. Her daughter's wedding is in 2 weeks. I think it was about 10 days, you know, by the time the fire department came down and decided whatever it was. And no place to make a wedding. And people are flooding her with clothes. Why don't you go to this hotel there? And so she's like, if we could have gone to a hotel, we would have done that already. So that's not happening. Now imagine, what would your stress level be as this is happening? And here you have a kala, you know, right before a wedding. You can imagine the nerves, the jitters, the emotions, the whole scenario there, right? What are they doing? Where's the wedding? What's going on? And this woman retained her composure. Calm and composed, and everybody called her. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate your help. We're going to figure it out. Of course, all those phone calls were definitely more detracting and more, okay? They ended up having the wedding in Eric Crown Hebrew Day School, the gym of Eric Crown Hebrew Day School. I remember going to that wedding, and the chuppah was in the base medrash, which was a small little thing, and then they went into the gym for the dinner, complete with basketball hoops and all, in the wedding. And guess what? they had a beautiful wedding, and of course everybody went out of their way to make it more joyous and to celebrate and to make it. But, you know, and sometimes when I ask my students, where would your stress level be? And I describe them, they're like, out of 1 to 10, where would it be? They say, 50. You know, they're like, no 1 to 10. I don't know where, you know, because they're kind of falling apart when they have 2 tests on one day, so all of a sudden they don't know what to do with themselves. You know, the middle class get, you know, because they're just, crying the tears, you know, the drama and all the rest of it. But, so, this is what, this is a tremendous, tremendous part of being a woman, to be the one who can really, really access, and it comes through our bitachon in Hashem, obviously, and knowing that when something is happening, and I remember my mother, Allah Hashem, a blessed memory, saying to me when I would say, oh, it's just what I needed, and she would say to me, yes, just what you needed. I would say it like, it's just what I needed. She'd say, yes, it was just what I needed, what you needed. And of course, I was like, can't I have a little sympathy here? You know, you're my mother. And she was like, but she believed in really fortifying her children and training us. So we got the, you know, with a lot of love too. So, yes.
Well, that's not the crown here. Can you talk about the Tate Divina at your relation? How can we say a woman should go out like a steamboat? But then we have Prelude of Zuma.
That's a very good question. If you don't mind, can we leave that to the end, okay? So if we, then we'll take some questions, okay? Thank you. And that's a really good question, actually. Okay, we look at a verse that tells us then, Zamama Sazeva Tikache, Umi Prichatea Nasa Karam. She sees a field, and she acquires the field, and with the fruit of her hands, in other words, with the labor of her hands, she plants a vineyard. So here we see this woman. Not only is she, you know, looking for fabrics and things for her family, and not all, and only is she like a merchant ship, but she is all of a sudden a real estate entrepreneur because she's buying land and she's planting vineyards. So now she's whatever that is that takes to plant vineyards. She's doing all of this, right? She's Haisa Kani. I'm sorry. She's Zamase. What is it? What are we hearing about this woman? So the commentaries here say that when she sees that something will be good for her family, lo tishkot ad asher tiknas. She does not rest until she can go out and get what she thinks would be beneficial for her family. So she is a woman who is, and again, you highlighted something very important, it can be done in a way, in a womanly way, in a feminine way, in a way of obviously innate modesty, that she's going out and she's going after what she needs for her family, but she's taking care of what she needs. There's a certain determination here, there's a certain persistence here, there's a certain vision of the future, because she looks at this barren piece of land, and she realizes that this will be a very good piece of land, and it will bring in a lot of revenue for my family, and I'll be able to use this field and harvest from this field grapes, which is more than harvesting corn or wheat or whatever it is. She takes it to the next level. She takes it to the field to its highest potential, and she sees and she, like I said, looks into the future. And she looks at the far-reaching ability of whatever it is she's involved in. And I think what we hear about this woman also is that she sees potential. And how important is this for us as women? Because there are so many times and so many situations where if we just look at the situation for what it is and don't look at the hidden potential, so we just see whether it's the child that we can't believe what a mess this child is, and she'll never be able to keep house, and she'll never be able to, and all of a sudden we shrink this child down to a sloppy mess of a child who will never be able to X, Y, Z, right? And because, but when we look at the child and we see the untapped potential and we see that this child, and we try to work with the tremendous special strengths of this child and bring it out and bring the potential into its fullest, then that can be something very special. And the woman's ability to see potential, and if you think back to Rachel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva, Rachel, the great Rachel, who is explained to us, brought out to us as this example of a woman who was able to see that her husband had tremendous strength and tremendous ability, albeit very, very dormant, because as we know, Rabbi Akiva had not started learning Torah, had not started learning Aleph Beis until he was 40 years old. Did not know anything. An ignoramus of, in terms of Torah, he knew nothing. And she saw in him his good character. She saw his midos, and she knew he was a person that if he applied his strength and his ability to Torah, he would rise to be an incredible person. And indeed, he did. But that was all about Rachel. It was all about this woman seeing the potential in her husband and working with feminine intuition and with the Bina Yetzera, this extra measure of intuition that God has granted us as women, and it is a womanly thing that Hashem gives us, and she used that to bring out the potential of her husband. So seeing something in its most barren form and just kind of saying, oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just pass that one up, right? And that it applies to people, it applies to opportunities. Sometimes we have to look at something and see, that is such an opportunity. It could do so much with that. It would help me develop as a person, it would help my family develop, whatever it is, and take that opportunity because we see that there really is so much going on over there. And then we have the idea of Chagra Ba'oz Masneha. She girds her loins, okay? There has to be some loins in ancient verses, don't you think? She girds her loins with strength, okay? Chagra Ba'oz Masneha Ta'amei Jota. And she strengthens her arms. So what we're hearing here, according to the commentary, is don't think this is easy. No one's saying it's easy. Chagra Ba'oz Masneha takes a lot of strength. And there are all different types of strength, as we know, right? There's physical strength. And sometimes we're just so depleted, and so I just can't, and we have to know when to stop. That is very true. And that's why Eishes Chayil actually is all about balance. It's all about balance. If we go too much to one extreme of these good special qualities, we'll drive ourselves into I don't know where. And if we go too much to the other extreme, we're just going to be doing not very much. And we can really see that in each and every one of these verses, but I think this one can highlight that for us. If a person uses their strength and says, okay, I'm going to push myself a little bit harder and then I'll be able to finish all this and to do all this, they can do it. But sometimes the woman pushes too much, then she's really going over the top, and that's not okay for her. We can't run ourselves into the ground, and we can't run our bodies into the ground either. So you have to know how to balance that. But there are other types of strength as well, because we're talking about the physical strength, we're talking about the emotional strength, the emotional stamina and energy that we as women need for so much of what goes on in our lives, because we need that emotional strength to deal with so many different people, to deal with our spouses, to deal with our children, to deal with our coworkers, to deal with whatever's going on in our lives. We women really are reservoirs of emotion and emotional strength and energy, but it takes a lot. And no one's saying it's easy. Least of all King Solomon. He's saying, Chagra Ba'oz Masneha, she's got to gird herself with strength. She's got to push herself. And then, of course, there's also spiritual strength. Because spiritual strength is what we do when we say, I'm really going to do this. Maybe it's a little bit hard for me. Maybe it's out of my comfort zone. Maybe it's not so convenient. Maybe it's not so easy. But I am going to push myself to go further, to do more, because I know that this will make me into a person who is spiritually closer to God. And so all of those strengths, and again, every woman needs to know when to use what and which one to apply where. And it's not easy. It doesn't come like this. This is part of our lifelong journey. And that strength that we need to use is part of the lifelong journey as well. And we hear then that, her candle is not extinguished at night. That meaning, and I can barely imagine that women actually live like this, or men either for that matter, but can you imagine living in a time where you work by candlelight? Okay, how fun is that? What happens when there's a blackout? I don't know if you have them too often, but we have them periodically in Chicago. There's a blackout at night, guess what everybody does? Go to sleep, forget it, work's done. Can you imagine all of a sudden everything grinds to a halt? Nothing there, nothing to be, what are you going to do? Anyone sitting in the kitchen working by candlelight? Not really. But here's this woman, and working into the hours of the night, okay, candlelight I would imagine has to be lit at Shkia time, which is about now, sunset time, so depending on the winter and summer, but this woman works into a few hours into the night. But I once heard actually from Rabbi Pesach Kron, who is a very well-known orator and author, of contemporary times, I once heard such a beautiful explanation on this, that the woman is the one whose candle is not extinguished at night. Night being used as a metaphor for dark, difficult times. And the woman is the one who remains the shining light, the beacon of light, even in the darkest of times. And if you think about women in the times of Egypt, the women in Mitzrayim, they were the ones who didn't give up, aren't they? They were the ones who weren't, it wasn't going to matter. They were going to have children anyway. Even though Paro gave his decree, and Amram, the husband of Yocheved, said, how can we be together? Let's just divorce our wives, because what's going to happen? All our kids are going to be killed. What for? And Yocheved and Miriam actually, right, the prophetess, the daughter of the prophetess, said, your decree is worse than Paro's. Right? Paro locus are Elohim's Charim. You, she said to her father Amram, in a very daring way, I would think, and she said to him, your decree is worse than Paro's, because Paro said the boys have to be killed. And you are decreeing that no children should be born, because you are divorcing your wife. And because of her, Amram, of course, as we know, rejoined Miriam, remarried Miriam, and Moshe was then born the savior of the Jewish people. So the Lo Yichva Balayla Neira, a woman using this emotional and spiritual strength, and of course physical as well, that we just referred to, can be that beacon of light even in dark, difficult times. Challenging times for the people of Israel are challenging times on a personal level. The woman remains that strong and that illuminating beacon of light. And then we see with this woman is Kapa Parsa La'ani V'Adela Shilcha La'Evyon. Her palm of her hand she stretches out to the poor person, and her arms are outstretched to the destitute person. And what we're noting over here, according to the commentary, is that there is a difference between the poor person and the person who is so destitute, so needy, he needs everything. Look at what he says. It's so interesting, because when you read the scriptures and you really analyze them, you see such incredible wisdom. The palm of her hand is, when you extend the palm of your hand to somebody, you are in relative proximity to that person. You're pretty close, right? Kapa parzalani, to a poor person who is completely embarrassed because he maybe fell on hard times, he doesn't have what he needs, but he's embarrassed of his situation in life. She stays very close to him, makes sure that it's all done in privacy, makes sure, which we know, the Rambam, the great Maimonides, when he describes the levels of charity, talks about giving charity privately as almost the highest. The highest level is to give someone a job. The second level is to make sure that nobody knows about it, right? The poor person doesn't always get. She tries to maintain his dignity by just extending the palm of her hand. When it comes to the destitute person who needs everything, she fills her arms with blankets and pillows and winter coats and whatever he needs. And the destitute person just needs it so badly that he's not embarrassed at all. Now, of course, she still tries to maintain his dignity, but it's showing that she recognizes and is sensitive to different people in different stations of life and different stages of life, and she's doing what it takes. You know, sometimes you see women who are like, okay, there's a family coming in from Israel. This happens in Chicago a lot, where there are, you know, big hospitals. I suppose you have some here too. And we have families coming in from Israel for treatment or whatever it is. And there'll be a woman who says, my job, I'll take care of this family from soup to nuts. Everything they need, I'll take care of them. Now, what if the family doesn't want to be taken care of, right? What if they want the ability to maintain their dignity as a family together, and yes, they need assistance, they may need someone to interpret, to be an interpreter down at the hospital for the doctors, but they don't want to be taken care of. But this woman is, well, that's what I do. I take care of families, right? It's about me, not about what they need, right? We need to be people who are sensitive to people in our lives, and we try to look at what they need, not at what we're good at or what we like doing. It's not about me. And that's what this woman understands. This woman understands that she's going to do what she can to help, but she's going to do it in such a way that she maintains that sensitivity to each person at their stage of life, at whatever it is. And then we see where it tells us that, Marvadim Asasala Sheshra Argaman Levusha, she's making accessories, bedroom accessories, she sews bedspreads, how about that, bed covering, and she is dressed in linen and in purple clothing. So this verse gives us this impression of, wow, here's a woman, she's making beautiful bed accessories for her bedroom, and she's dressed in this royal color of purple. I wore the wrong color tonight, sorry. And, you know, linen, very expensive fabric. What the Gemara tells us comes to mind over here. The Gemara tells us that Isha Na'a, a nice-looking woman, Dira Na'a, a nice home, and you reach your house, is the perfect setting for this, a nice home, and came in Na'im, nice utensils, nice furniture, Marchina Mitzvah Shal Adam, bring a person a certain amount of Harchava Chazah, she just gives you, I don't know how to translate that. Can anybody help me with that? Let's see, are you helping me with that one, Sarah? How do you translate that? It's a certain amount of just space. Yeah, it gives you a certain amount of space. It makes you feel good. It brings you into a good place. In other words, now we're not talking about needing, and that's not what the Gemara refers to, needing to spend, I don't know how much money on the latest designer brand clothing to be that nice looking woman. We're not talking about having a makeover and having plastic surgery every 2 years to be that nice looking woman. That's not what we're talking about. But we're talking about just using whatever is at our disposal to make things nice and clean and be well-groomed as women, of course, and our houses to look nice. You don't have to fly in tile from Italy to have a dirana'a. Just everything looking nice, looking put together, clean, right? Children who are looking. And this is something that the Jewish woman takes pride in. And the Gemara itself tells us this is something that the woman is to be praised for, okay? Obviously, it's depending again at your situation in life and your stage of life. If somebody's got a bunch of little kids, you don't expect that home to look like a model home every minute of the day. It's not going to happen, and that's okay. But this woman is a woman who takes pride in her home, takes pride in herself, and feels good and wants other people to feel good when they're around her and around her home. And it's not, you know, there's this very negative stereotype of the Jewish woman who's, you know, had a half askew, you know, maybe the shekels have off the head, and she's walking around with looking like a mess. That's certainly not what King Solomon is talking about, is it? She's looking nice, she's looking put together, and she's using that as a means of bringing joy to her family and just making this a good place and a happy place to be. And that's what she's trying to do for her family. And then we'll go down. We're going to have to skip quite a bit here. Let's go to the verse that tells us, Pi hapas kabal chachma. Her mouth, she opens her mouth with wisdom. And the commentary over here, the Mitzvah tells us over here, Kol ma'amareha himabal chachma. Everything she says is with wisdom. Now, what an incredible thing to say about a woman. Do you not think so, right? Because the Talmud tells us, a well-known a phrase from the Talmud, that Asara Kavim Shel Sicha Yerjul Olam, 10 measures of speech came into the world, and 9 of them were taken by women. That is not meant to be a disparaging remark. That is meant to be a reality statement. And I think we do understand as women that talking is important, and we use our talk for wonderful things. We nurture, we nourish, we encourage, we cheer. We're the cheerleaders of our family. We're the ones we advise, we consult, we do all kinds of things with our words, don't we? And I really think, I remember one time when my husband and I were out of town for a while, and my husband called his closest friend back in Chicago to ask him something. And his conversation went like this, hello, whatever his name, how are you? No, 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 he asked him what he needed. He spoke to him for maybe another 2 minutes, and then, and I was like, oh, just like me and my best friend, we're just like that. I've been away for 2 weeks, we have nothing to say. He goes, you know, it's plenty of nothing to say. My husband's the type of person, he takes care of what he has to take care of. You know, the practical, down-to-earth man who does what he needs to do. Of course, there's some guys who are schmoozers too. They know how to do it, especially the teenage boys, they know how to really schmooze and, you know, stuff like that. But this is just telling us that women use words a lot. And here we're being told that this is a woman who uses her words very wisely. And whenever she speaks, her words come out with wisdom. What an incredible compliment to a woman that look what she's doing. She's thinking before she speaks. How am I going to help this little 3-year-old feel better? She's having a tantrum. I'm not giving her that third popsicle. It isn't happening. But how am I going to use my words to build rather than to hurt? And that applies to a 3-year-old and to a 13-year-old and to a 30-year-old and to people we work with and to our in-law relatives and everybody in our life. And she teaches kindness. She promotes kindness. Her words promote kindness. And she's able to help people both with her words and her actions. And then we see, as we come closer to the end of Eshes Chayil, we see where her children get up and they praise her, and her husband gets up and he praises her. And actually, it seems that this verse does not contain any special quality of the woman. It's just saying, oh, reality, her sons get up, her children get up and praise her, and her husband gets up and praises her. But if you think about it, I think it's such a tremendous praise to the woman. That the people who are the nearest and dearest, you know, there are a lot of people out there that can look at us and say, what a great woman, she's this, she's that, she's whatever. and the children at home, or the closest, nearest, and dearest at home, don't get that kind of treatment at home. They get the treatment where the mom's exhausted, she doesn't have patience, she doesn't have time, the voice level goes up, the decibel level goes up, and not all children would be the ones to get up and praise her mother, their mother. And, you know, and we're not just saying, Joe, my mother's power is the best in the world. I don't like anybody's voice. Did you ever notice that? That every child thinks their mother's power is the best in the world. And sometimes you'll hear them say, I don't need anything about my mother. Then you taste the power and you're like, oh my God, this Joe is after all. I can't swallow it, but this kid is saying, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about these children and this husband getting up and really extolling the virtues of this woman and saying, Rabos Panos Asuchana As Alis Al Kulana. Many women have done actions of accomplishment and strength, but you have surpassed them all. The way the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, who is the great giant of Torah knowledge in the late 1700s, the Vilna Gaon explains this verse also as a metaphor, but we can then reapply it to women. So let's try the explanation for women first. It goes like this. Rabos Panos Asuchana, if you go into a room full of women and you put all of these women together in that room, in this room, let's take this for example, you'll find one woman who's great and does everything in the best possible way. And you'll find one woman who is the beacon of light and hope for everybody. And you'll find one woman who has this reservoir of inner serenity and menuchas hanefesh. And you'll find one woman who takes pride in her home and in her looks, in the way she writes. He says, you'll find that in a room full of women. But you, the ancient child, bring it all together. Have all of these qualities. And that's what they are saying about their wife and mother. And so the Vilna Gaon explains that this can be said about Torah as well. The Mishnah and Avos explains that there are 48 things that a person needs to have in place in order to really acquire Torah. He doesn't just have to be a genius. That is not going to take a person on the path to Torah greatness. He has to have good character traits. He has to have a lev tov, a good heart. He has to be a listener who hears what other people have to say. He has to be no seva olim chavero, join in the burden of other people. It talks about a lot of character traits and interpersonal relationship type things that if a person is really going to become great in Torah knowledge and Torah learning, he has to have these 48 things. And so the Vilna Gaon says, if you go into a Beis Medrash, if you go into a shul, a place where people and men are learning, you will find this man has this virtue, this man has this, you'll find this one, that one, that one. You'll find 48 in that room. But the true Torah scholar is being referred to as the Eshes Chayil, and the word Chayil, in its gematria, its numerical equivalent, is 48. Okay, Chayil, Ches is 8, Yud is 10, and Lamed is 30, 48. So he says, that represents the Torah scholar, the great giants of Torah are people who don't just have one character trait, or two, or five, or six. They have all 48 together. And those are truly the leaders of our generation. And as we know, somebody does not become a leader of the Jewish people just by being great in Torah, being a brilliant man. It comes from their humility, it comes from their willingness to carry the burden of the Jewish people on their shoulders. I mean, think of great people. Think of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, or Moshe Feinstein, who died approximately, I think, 27 years ago, when my son, who is approximately 27, you have to try to remember how old your children are, then you could, you know. But Moshe Feinstein, who was a great, great Torah scholar and the giant and leader of the Jewish people, they tell over stories about him that after he died, this Russian woman came knocking on the door of his apartment. And, where's that old man, she said. And they said, what old man? You know, the old man who used to read my letters that I got in Yiddish, he would read me my letters and write the answer to me. That old man, where is he? Having no knowledge whatsoever that this was the great leader of the generation and coming every week to read the letters that she got in Yiddish that she could not understand and write a response for her. What an incredible thing. This is a Torah scholar. This is a great person. This is not just a brilliant man. And then we come to the conclusion, Sheker Achim Behebel Yofi Isha Yirat Hashem Hikisalal. Beauty and charm are false and illusory. Isha Yirat Hashem Hikisalal, the woman who is God-fearing, is the one who is deserving of praise. Now, King Solomon is not demoting beauty and saying there's no place for it. He just said a few verses earlier that the woman who's beautiful and dignified, that's great, right? But what he is saying is that if it is of value unto itself, beauty and all of that, he says, that is illusory. That is an illusion. And that is a fleeting illusion that passes with time. And that is not what a woman should be praised of. And I think of something that happened when I was a child, and that is, we used to go down to Miami many, many years. We spent many happy childhood Pesachs at my aunt and uncle in Miami. And when we used to go to Miami, my father, who's the head of a yeshiva, took the opportunity to do what heads of yeshiva have to do, raise money for their yeshiva. So he's from Miami, and my uncle would help him out. My uncle was the rabbi of the shul, Rabbi Wine, so he, you know, would help him out. He would give him a list of people, and my father would go out to different people to raise money. Well, one of the people that he went to every year was a fabulously wealthy woman who lived in a mansion that took up a city block, square city block, and she was as eccentric as they come. This is a woman who had lost her husband many years earlier. I don't believe she had any children at all. And she was very, very eccentric. She was known to keep people in her house talking to them for hours at a time. So my father, he had to do what he had to do, but he came up with a plan. And his plan was he would take his children along, one or two of us at a time, because then he'd be able to say after an hour or so, you know, my children need to go home to eat lunch, my wife is expecting my children to come home, or, you know, we would kind of start getting cranky, I guess, and, you know, then she would let him go. But that was the only way he could get it. As a matter of fact, one time there was a man from Israel who came to raise money. He was staying at my uncle's house. My uncle came in the morning to wake him up for shul, and the bed was unslept in, and my uncle was frantic. He was like, what happened to this man? He got mugged on the streets of Miami, and then he tried to trace the man's steps the night before. He said, oh, he went to Mrs. LaCour Schwartz. And he went over to the house. This is 6 o'clock in the morning. The lady didn't, she was there all night. This old lady kept him there all night and did not let him leave. She talked to him all night long, this poor man. Anyways, that's what I'm telling you about. Okay, so here's this lady. Her house was like beyond what a collection of this and other thing. And she was, at the time I remember her, this Mrs. Schwartz, she had some kind of medical condition, so she had these piercing blue eyes, but they were, medically they were like, what's the word I'm looking for? They were, what? That's the name of the condition? Sticking out, right. Bulging out, that sort of thing. Her eyes were bulging out, and she had this great, long gray hair that was just in every direction, flying in every direction. Anyway, so I was about 12 years old, and my father decided that I wasn't going to be enough of a nudge to take along as an excuse. They took along my 5-year-old sister for the first time. We come into the house, and the butler lets us into the house, and the entrance, Wager House, was like an art gallery with these oil portraits for the ceiling, lighted oil portraits. My little sister comes in, and she's like looking up and down all around, and her eyes light on this one portrait of a beautiful young girl about 18 years old, wearing a red, I remember the portrait girl wearing a red velvet dress, her hands in her lap, and this lady, Mrs. Schwartz, came in, the butler called her, she came in, and my sister looks at this portrait, beautiful young lady, looks at Mrs. Schwartz back and forth, and then she said to her, Mrs. Schwartz, you were so beautiful, this 5-year-old girl says to her. My father and I guessed, because she used past tense, and you never know what this lady would do, she'd kick you out of the house or something, and this lady was tickled pink, because indeed it was her, and she could not get over how smart this little 5-year-old girl was. What a smart little daughter you have, Rabbi. And she gave the yeshiva that year $10,000. My father had never gotten anything more than, you know, whatever, probably a few hundred. The sad part of the story is that when she died, she left all her money to an Indian reservation, so at least those $10,000 went to a good cause. But anyway, when I think of this story, I think of Sheker HaChayim VeHevel Yofi. Beauty is fleeting. Beauty is illusory. It doesn't last. The most beautiful woman in the world, as she ages, and some of us are already like using the creams that cost, I don't know how much, you know, trying to, whatever it is, right? If you have time, I could tell you another story. Do you want to hear a story? Do you have time? Do you have 5 minutes for the story? Okay, then we're going to close up over here. This is, I was once asked by a women's group in Chicago, they were doing a ladies' night out, they were doing the benefit for their organization, but they didn't want to do the typical tea or lunch and blah, blah, blah. So they decided on a new idea, original idea, they were doing a benefit at Saks Fifth Avenue in Old Orchard in Chicago, it has been closed, I don't know where it is, but they were doing it, and they were giving out makeup samples and cosmetics or whatever it was, and they asked me to speak because they didn't want to just have like just a, you know, whatever it was. Anyways, I wasn't so sure. I was so excited with this whole deal, you know, Jackson Avenue, we're giving out makeup, we're giving out cosmetics, whatever. I was like a little, but I decided that if I could say something, then, okay. So, what was my topic? My topic was going to be inner beauty, because they're talking outer beauty, I'm talking inner beauty. I told them, you want me to talk about inner beauty, we can do that. Okay, that was my topic. I started out by saying my grandson had recently asked me, he's about six, he said, so Bubby, how old are you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, and my daughter rushes in, you're not supposed to ask Bubby that question, you know, and then my grandson thinks, I said to him, so how old do you think I am? He says, well, my Rebbe is probably about 60, so you're probably about 80. This is 10 years ago. He says, so you're probably about 80. I said, so much for outer beauty, we'll have to focus on inner beauty. Anyway, and I start talking about the inner beauty of a woman, the refinement of a woman, and the modesty and the dignity, and I talk about the matriarchs. And in this talk, I start saying that we live in a secular world that values beauty, external beauty, to such a degree, and just thinks that if we use the right cosmetics, we are going to look like those models in the magazines. We all know that, guess what, it ain't happening anytime soon. But somehow we get, you know, conned into believing that if you just use this, or you just use that, or this or that, or and I said, and you know, the celebrities and the models, I said, who do all of that, do we really think their lives are lives of beauty? And I was just kind of, and as I'm saying this, the cosmeticians who are getting out their samples, mind you, right after, are drawing in culture, because I'm like, oh no, here are these, I think, non-Jewish cosmeticians, and I'm talking about inner beauty and how celebrities, and, okay. So, I decided, listen, if I came here to accomplish something, I'm going to just talk about inner beauty, and I did. Okay. When I finished, guess who comes over to me? All the cosmeticians crowd around me. And they said to us, we love your speech because we deal with those celebrities. We could tell you what their lives are like. They would kill each other for a spot in blah, blah, blah. They start going, I was like, okay. This is what we do. We live in a society that values beauty to such a degree that we kind of lose perspective. Shekhar HaChem Ha'Eliyofi, King Solomon says, beauty in and of itself as a value unto itself is false. Isha Yirat Hashem, a woman who is God-fearing and brings beauty into her life and uses it to fulfill the will of God, that is somebody to be praised. And just to conclude, the Archot Tzadikim, the path of the righteous, actually the author of the path of the righteous is unknown, but he was about 16th century, and a very widely accepted book, a book of Mussar, he gives a wonderful parable at the outset of the book, and he says, that because if you think about it, Isha Yiras Hashem, you saw this God-fearing woman. Why is this left to the last verse in Isha Kyle? It should be right at the beginning. God-fearing woman, that's the most special quality, right? Mm-hmm. But he gives the comparison to a strand of pearls, and I think it's so nice because we began with pearls, we're going to end with pearls. A strand of pearls, he says, imagine if you have a strand of pearls, and if you look closely, you'll see that an expensive strand of pearls is, every pearl is knotted in place. Because if you have an 18-month-old sitting on your lap and he pulls at that strand of pearls, and the pearls go flying in every direction, and there you are on your hands and knees trying to find a pearl under the radiator, under the cabinet, right? But if there's a knot that's knotting everything in place, well then, you can keep everything where it's supposed to be. So he says to us that the fear of God is the knot that knots every other quality mentioned here into place. And when life pulls at that strand of pearls, right, when life gets difficult and the challenges pull at us, if a woman has fear of God, meaning God's will is more important than her own, and she is willing to do what it takes to fulfill the will of God, keeps each one of those special qualities in place. So just to bring this together, I personally feel very privileged to be able to teach Eishes Chayil and to be able to speak about Eishes Chayil, and thank you for being such a wonderful audience. We did have a question here, and the question goes back to Terry. That's your name. Terry mentioned that we find in the Torah that when it says that Dinah, who was the daughter of Leah, went out to see what was going on in the surrounding village of Shechem, she was taken by Shechem, and she was taken by force by Shechem, and then of course we have the whole story about Yaakov's son, Shimon Levi, wanting to take revenge for their sister having been violated. They kill out the city of Shechem. Yaakov is very angry at them. He curses their anger, for he's very upset, I should say, with them, and he curses their action. He doesn't curse them, he curses their action, whatever it is. So, and there, Dinah is not exactly being held in high esteem for going out of the environment of holiness, which was the house of Yaakov, to the surrounding environment, which was less than holy and whatever it is. And how do we put that together with that this woman is going out to bring in, to supplement the income? So it's an excellent question. And what we're here, the idea, and that's something that we have to keep in mind all the time, that a Jewish woman there is one of the virtues of the Jewish woman is the innerness of the woman, the innerness of the Jewish woman. And innerness means that she's not out there running all over the place, certainly, but it's also that when she is, there's an innerness about her, okay? So exactly how, in other words, this woman, if she's going out and she's bringing in things from further afield, it doesn't actually mean she's a globetrotter with a briefcase flying off to India or to South America to bring in whatever it is. It means she's looking at the environment, seeing what it is she can use to supplement the family's income. She doesn't actually have to be going there. I mean, in ancient times, I don't know what they did. I can't imagine that any of the women of Israel actually boarded a ship and went in. It's not saying that, right? It's not saying that. And there has to be an innerness to our actions, because we know that when God created the very first woman in the world, Chava, Eve, now let's remember they weren't wearing clothing in those days, right? Adam and Chava, before they ate from the tree of knowledge, were completely stark naked. But when God created her, the Midrash says something fascinating, that when every limb of her body, he said to her, be an inner woman. And that's why he created her from the rib, which is inside, right? Which is even when, the Midrash says, even when a man is standing completely naked, his rib is covered, is inner. And God put into us the innerness of that sense of modesty, being an inner person, right? Which again, is not exactly an attribute that is held in high esteem in the world around us, being an inner person. It's all about how much, you know, it's so interesting because the media and all the hype of all of the social media is all about what are you doing now and where are you and what are you? But what happened to the internet? What happened to the innate quality of privacy and being an inner person and not needing to post everything about my life so that everybody knows what I, if I, you know, I don't know what, I don't even know what, everything and anything, right? So that quality of the woman is the innerness. There is the innerness. So even when she is doing whatever she's doing, it has to be with that inner quality. And Dina, you know, listen, Dina was a very great person. She was a very great person. Rabbi Yerucham Levav, is the one I quoted before, describes her greatness as the daughter of Yaakov in this one area, and it's very difficult for us to understand because we are so way past that. I mean, we so go out and do lots of things and go to lots of places, right? Somehow, she was violated by Shem at that time, and that's what happened. I don't think I'm giving you a complete answer, but I want you to understand that there's a difference between, you know, going out and being a woman who goes out and still being able to be in her kind of way. Yes?
You said this last thing very quickly. Each crow represents a different quality, and the nut is your traumatic upholder.
Right. That's
beautiful.
Right.
Where did you say that?
The Aruch HaZadikim is the beginning of the Aruch HaZadikim, actually, because he says that Shlomo HaMelech opens the book of Proverbs with Yiras HaShem, Reishis Chachmei, Yiras HaShem, Reishis Das, that's the third verse and the sixth verse initially. Yiras HaShem, Reishis Das, talks about fearing God, and he ends the book of Mishlei with, this, Isha Yiras HaShem Yitzchak. Also the book of Kohelet, so the Ecclesiastes ends with Yiras HaShem, Sof Tzemach Kol Nishma, Esav Kim Yirah, fear God. So he's showing us that Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, held the fear of God as the first and the primary, but yeah, it knocks together every quality. And think about it, when times get really rough, what is going to hold us together? And when something, you know, you hear people who you think to be nice, respectful people, and then they get upset or angry, and boy, do they let loose, right? And boy, do you not want to be around them when they let certain words out of their mouths, when they're just rude. Right? And if a person has fear of God, that holds them. It really does. It's like not about me and not about how angry I am or whatever it is. And okay. Anything else that we could address or answer? Okay. Thank you so much. And thank you again, Iri, for opening your home. And, trying to